Ooh, like you're doing a selfie.
I am doing a selfie.
A selfie on a podcast. let's think that through a little bit more.
You know, these pandemic quarantine times, you just have to do the little things to entertain yourself.
This is true. This is me on a podcast. Right. All right. So, speaking of podcast, who are we talking to? I think I should tell you that.
I was going to say, that's the question, the magic question for you, sir, is who am I talking to?
Okay. Well, let me put my selfie camera down. You know what? I'm going to take a selfie of myself as I say this. Okay.
Oh, nice.
Well, today, Courtney, our guest is Ben Gallagher. Ben is the co-founder of B&A, a behavior research agency whose clients include Nike, Google, and Beats by Dre. He is an expert on business culture, which dictates the fortunes of corporate giants and fast-growth startups alike, but has a highly original take on what culture really means, how businesses can go about building a productive one. Bum, bum, bum.
I love it. I love talking culture. I'm excited for this one. All right. Ooh. Let's jump in.
Yay! You are listening to Tribe Pod, a podcast series of interviews of interest to the HR community. It is hosted by Courtney Lane, produced by Jim Stroud, sponsored by Proactive Talent, and enjoyed by you. Today's episode begins right after this.
Recruitment marketing, as compared to maybe employer branding, is all about getting your message and your story in front of the right audience. It's a lot to manage, and what Proactive Talent does for our clients is we help centralize so you have one partner, one vendor to help you manage all those relationships. And not only that, we help you track the effectiveness of every media dollar you spend on hiring so that you know in real time that you're getting the greatest ROI for your marketing investment to attract great talent into your company. We help our clients with recruitment marketing in a couple ways. One is in recruitment marketing strategy. And with that, we really take the time to help you build the right strategy, and then we get mutual approval on that strategy before you spend a single dime. The other way we do this is through our agency of record service. This is a partnership with you where we're able to reach out to publishers on your behalf to negotiate better pricing, to execute on media campaigns, and really act as an extension of your team. Some of the benefits that our clients have seen working with Proactive Talent's recruitment marketing services is an overall reduction of 30% cost per applicant. That's really significant. It's showing that we're able to leverage great technology, programmatic, and we're also flexible and scalable. We're platform agnostic. We're always gonna use whatever the greatest and latest technology is, whatever the best platforms are to help create efficiencies in your media purchasing so that you're always on the cutting edge.
For more information on Proactive Talent, visit them online at proactivetalent.com or click the link in the podcast description.
All right. Today I'm joined by Ben Gallagher, who is the founder of B&A, a research agency, a behavior research agency, an expert on business culture. Thanks for joining us, Ben.
Hey, Courtney. Lovely to meet you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So to start things off, tell folks a little bit about what B&A is, what you all do, and we'll go from there.
Okay, cool. So B&A is what we call a creative management consultancy. We use creative tools and techniques to solve business problems. And we harbor a kind of secret ambition to be the fastest, most creative management consultancy in the world. And in essence, what we do is we answer three questions that our clients quite often ask themselves. The first question is, what's going on in the world around us? And that's very much about research and insight and understanding human behavior out there in the world. And we do that all over the world in many different forms. The second question we answer is, where do we go next? And that's a question that often is about strategy, defining future visions and ambitions, putting together plans to make things happen, anything that's about moving forward from the present. And then the third question is, how do we get the best from our people? And that's very much about culture, organizational culture. How do you create the right working environment? How do you think about team dynamics, behaviors, structures to get the very best out of the teams that you have that enable you then to deliver on your ambitions? We work for some clients across all three of those spaces, and for others, just one or maybe two. And we operate out of a studio in London, a studio in Portland, Oregon, and a studio in Shanghai, in China. And our work takes lots of shapes and forms, from very short, quick turnaround, 1 week engagements through to 3, 6, 9, 12 month projects. We tend to combine our teams from across the world to work on things. And we work across the for-profit world, clients like Nike and Google and Samsung, the cultural space for clients like the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra or the Manchester International Festival, and the non-profit space, working for clients like Mary Stopes International or The Girl Effect. So a broad range of work across those three different questions.
Great. And I would imagine that even across that broad range of types of companies and businesses, sizes and shapes and all of that, one thing that probably remains true is that for most folks, when they start thinking about organizational change, it can start to feel a little bit like a slog. It's tough to get buy-in. It's tough to get people on board. It's even tougher to maintain it. And I think a lot of times people sort of think of organizational change as great in theory, hard in reality, so maybe we just skip it. But at the end of the day, ultimately many businesses are going to have to sort of push themselves to do it. From your experience and perspective, are there any telltale signs that a company is in a place where they need to make change and, you know, that they're even ready to make that kind of change?
It's a really good question. And I think that when you think about change, you need to think about it coming from probably two possible contexts. The first one is when there is a problem or a crisis that needs solving. For example, we are losing people and we don't know how to stop that. Or people are unhappy about something that either exists in the organization or that's being done at the moment. And so that's kind of change to solve a problem. The other way of thinking about change and when it occurs is more so around change to create an opportunity. So for example, that may be we have bought another organization or another business and we see an opportunity emerging to get after something new. Or maybe we've spotted an opportunity in the market and we want to create something to get after it. And so that change is about taking advantage of opportunities rather than necessarily stopping problems. But nonetheless, change is hard and challenging for people. We are creatures of habit, and invariably, no matter whether it's to stop a problem or take advantage of an opportunity, people will ask the question, what does this mean for me? And that can both be exciting, but it can also be nerve-wracking too. So there's not really ever a good time for change, but equally, there's not necessarily a bad time for change either.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when we're thinking about change, in particular when you talk about from a culture perspective, from a people perspective, you know, I feel like, and you know, many of our listeners are HR leaders, and so I think they would agree with me in this, that oftentimes HR is tasked with owning those change initiatives that come into that culture space. Is that really where culture and change initiatives that deal with people should really live in a business? Should HR be the owner of culture, or ultimately who should be responsible for that?
To be honest, I think that everybody's responsible for the culture of an organization, everybody within it, from the top to the bottom and from the left to the right, so to speak. I think that at B&A, we really believe that the culture is in the work. And what that means is that the culture is formed through the everyday interactions, the everyday behaviors and actions of everybody in order to do the work that the organization is aiming to do. It doesn't exist in off-sites and in fun activities separate to the work. Whilst those can be really valuable in contributing to building relationships and to deepening bonds between people and learning new things about each other, the culture is formed and held within the work you do. And therefore, to silo it into one department alone, I think, is a mistake. When change occurs, invariably there are possibly kind of structural or legal processes that need to be followed. And of course, HR is a department that is able to run that element of the change program. But I personally would empower a cohort of people across an organization to drive a change program rather than put it into one department only.
Yeah, I love that you say that culture is a function, you know, is a part of the function of work, because I think the trend we've seen, especially in the past decade, is that, you know, it's the fancy office, it's the happy hours, it's the sort of that aesthetic of culture, that look and feel of a certain culture versus necessarily what's really happening in a space. And I think that is now more than ever sort of been put in the hot seat, because so many companies that relied on that physical space really, quote unquote, defining their culture, you know, they don't have that option anymore. They're remote, and you know, you all having offices across the world, you know, remote culture, and here at Project Talent, we've been remote since the get-go. And so, when the pandemic hit, it wasn't quite the same emotional shift from a remote culture kind of space. I would have to imagine you're getting a lot of questions around how do we maintain our culture, or even for quite a few folks, maybe even how do we build a positive culture when you don't have anybody sitting in that space together. So what's the advice you give to leaders who are trying to figure out how to navigate this sudden shift to a remote environment?
It's another great question. I think, as you say, the culture is in the work, and therefore what I think you need to do is to look at your organization and really understand where the cultural strength lies. Is it in a shared vision? Is it in a common language? Is it in the bonds that people have between themselves as individuals and teammates? And use those points as the start point for maintaining your culture. At B&A, we have a kind of theory of change around culture, and that has three parts to it. The first part is see the individual, be the individual. And that's very much about identifying and celebrating and sharing who you really are as a person. And continuing to do that at a time like that, this is really, really important. And actually, because we're all working from our homes and from kind of parts of our personal lives that our colleagues might not normally see, there's a great opportunity to get to know each other better, actually. By sharing things that are around us that we wouldn't normally bring into the office, for example. The second part of our theory of change is unite the team. And that's very much then about finding the commonalities, the bonds, the points of connection between the collection of individuals that make up the organization or the team. Recognizing where the strengths are, but equally where the gaps might be or the weaknesses might be. Very often uniting the team is about building trust. So what is there that you can do at a time like this to really show the team that you trust them, even though they're not in the office and in front of you every day, for example. And then the third question is tackle the challenge together, the third kind of part of the theory of change. And that is about building on being open and honest and vulnerable about who you really are, uniting the team together, then you can get after some of the more challenging things that you might be facing together as a team. And so at a time like this, that might be about calling out that there are challenges with communication or other issues, or it might be about creating ways of working together that you haven't tried before, for example. But I do think that, you know, often what we find is that culture is often ignored when times are good, but actually is most relied upon when times are challenging. And this is a challenging time. And so it's a great opportunity to really look at your culture of your organization and ask yourself the question, what is it about this culture that is strong or powerful or unique or compelling? And let's build on that.
When individuals are asking themselves, when business leaders are asking themselves those questions, and when you work with your clients, is your recommendation, should these be conversations that are being had at the leadership level? Are these conversations that are had in town halls where everybody gets to sit in the room together? I mean, how do you, when you want to start to concretely, you know, put language around what your culture is, who needs to be at the table to be a part of that conversation?
I think that you need to think about it in a number of different kind of combinations. Undeniably, the leadership is a really important kind of set of stakeholders. Their behaviors trickle down and influence the rest of the organization. And as we sometimes say at B&A, a fish rots from its head, which is a slightly crude phrase, but, you know, it's true. If things are determined from the very top, people will follow. And so there's a degree to which a leadership team absolutely has to be involved in anything that you do, and certainly has to sign up to it and model any behaviors that you decide to implement. However, their view of the entire organization is often skewed because they are at a leadership level. And so you need to be able to gather and enable a wider cohort of team members to participate. And sometimes the way I think about this is that you might create moments of mass participation, for example, a town hall to be able to gather questions or contribute ideas. And then you might have a smaller working group that represents an organization. And then you have a leadership team who ultimately will lead the change, if you like. So I don't think it's a single answer. It's about trying to represent the organization wholly, gather lots of input and create a sense of ownership amongst the team, but also be realistic about where or who is going to most influence the organization going forward.
Yeah. So, you know, here we are in a pandemic and people are suddenly at home, and that's one layer. And then following the death of George Floyd, there was a great deal of civil unrest, rightly so. And, you know, I think what we started seeing were companies were not only then grappling with how to sort of internally manage maybe their business culture, but then also having to really step up and be accountable for what that culture was. I mean, did they have practices or things that were happening within their doors that, you know, had racist under or even overtones to them? I think while we've seen a lot of civil unrest and protests and things like that come up when we've seen the police brutality historically, I think this is the first time I've seen such a broad sweeping sort of external ownership of companies saying, we're going to look inside and we're going to change things, and they're outwardly committing to it. But, That's a pretty big commitment. I mean, if a business has concerns that within their own doors there are, you know, issues with racism, or even if they just feel like, maybe they don't, but they feel like it's important to be having that conversation in order to not be in a place where there's issues of racism. What advice do you have there? How do companies own this kind of conversation when it comes to their culture and moving things forward?
That's a great question, and it's obviously a very pertinent question at the moment, and a very sensitive topic. I think the first thing for me that's very important to remember is this is everybody's problem, and we are collectively waking up to the systemic racism and racial injustice that exists in many parts of modern day society, and that needs to be fixed fundamentally. Mm-hmm. The answer doesn't lie with only those who have been subjected to that injustice. It lies with every employee, every citizen, quite frankly. It requires systemic change. So from the number of people on boards, making sure that is equitable and diverse and representative at the very highest level, right through to hiring policies, right through to how a brand expresses itself and shows up in the world, it needs to be addressed at every single level. And so it requires a collective effort. I think that because it is a challenging subject, organizations need to create a safe space for those conversations to occur. And that is because not everybody feels comfortable and able to be honest about these issues. And they need to be able to be. It's obviously an evolving picture, and different organizations are addressing it in different ways. But I think you need to start from the principle of it is everybody's responsibility. It requires real honesty. It requires very challenging conversations, and those need to be able to take place. And in order for them to take place, people need to feel like they are in a safe space for that to be so. I think the final point is that it must lead to action, and conversation alone is not enough. And so organizations need to be willing to commit to real change and real action in this area. And lasting change in action, not just something that exists for 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, but fundamental changes. Right. So it's very timely, and it is a really, really important issue, but it is all of our responsibility.
So it's, as you talked through that and as I reflect back on the conversation we've had as a whole, I think there's been a fairly common thread of how there is a collective ownership in so much of the work that a company has to do when it comes to their culture and how they move things forward. Do you find that there are that the either lack of interest or lack of awareness around the importance of that sort of collective effort is a common challenge or barrier that companies have to pushing forward? And maybe the broader question is, what are those common challenges? What are those common areas where companies, just maybe need y'all to come in because they can't do it on their own? They continue to struggle and trip up on trying to move things forward.
I think there are a few things that can kind of get in the way. The first one is, and this is often why we would get asked to work on something, that if it's being led internally, sometimes it's very hard for those leading it to actually take part in the process because they're leading it. And if somebody's leading it from a position of authority, it can be a challenge to helping people feel safe and comfortable to being really honest, because they're talking to their bosses, right? And they're worried about their jobs or what's going to happen. And so very often we're asked to take part because it allows our clients to be in the process and to be a part of the solution, not just the one kind of driving from upon high. So that's, I think, the first challenge. The second challenge is people would like to think and assume that the change can happen much quicker than it does. And fundamental organizational change and culture change doesn't occur over the space of 3 days at an offsite. It takes time. It needs to be distributed across a team. Behaviors have to embed. With much of behavior change theory, we know that it's not linear. So they're kind of up and down and backwards and forwards and try some things and try other things, and some stuff sticks and some doesn't. And you have to be willing to be experimental in the change too. So sometimes I think that people can assume it's it's easier than perhaps it it's easier to make real progress. And I think there's sometimes a fear of it becoming complex and there becoming too much navel gazing. And that's why I think rooting it in the work is most important. How is this affecting what we're actually doing on a day-to-day basis? What are the positive possibilities that we can create quickly that we can act upon so that we feel like change is starting to happen? So I think there are a number of barriers. One, can we have honest conversations if our boss is leading this? Number two, how can we commit to navigating a longer change journey? And number three, how do we make sure that we don't overcomplicate? And how can we root everything in what we do every day, which is the work we do?
So with that, and thinking about, you know, our primary audience here, that our listeners being primarily human resources and talent acquisition leaders, any advice specifically for them if they help their business leaders or their people, you know, sort of navigate and drive business culture? Any thoughts specifically for that group you would want to share?
I think my advice primarily would be human. This is about people. Be honest, call out the challenges. Everybody will see them, so there's no point pretending that they don't exist. Be willing to be vulnerable. We don't have all the answers all the time, and that's okay too. And build trust. Build trust amongst each other. Build trust in the process or the commitment. And trust is granular, right? Trust is built by all the small things that you do. So one hit gestures and sweeping gestures don't really work on this stuff. You've got to dig into the granularity of it. You've got to commit to it in the longer term. And you can find that you can build momentum very, very quickly, but stick at it. See it as a constant as opposed to a finite end. I think culture is infinite rather than finite. It's something that you should always be working on and to enhance and evolve and improve, not just to kind of address it a period of time and then leave it.
Right, absolutely. Well, and I think, you know, you mentioned trust, and I, you know, sort of going back to earlier when we were talking about that remote environment, I think that's been something that has probably been even more sort of brought to the top of the conversation, because a lot of companies who chose not to go remote prior to COVID from their business structure, more often it had less to do with the work and more to do with there probably being an underlying lack of trust that people were going to get things done if they weren't physically sitting in the office. And maybe I shouldn't sweep and say it's the majority, but I certainly know I've worked for organizations and engaged with organizations where there has been a feeling, maybe if not broadly, at least for you know, certain leaders, this feeling that we can't let people go work from home because there isn't trust that the work will get done or that people will do what they're saying they're doing. Any specific exercises or talking points or things that you know, leaders can arm themselves with when it comes to addressing trust in the conversation, or that sense of lack of it, or helping to build the sense, even from the employee stance back up to leadership, that trust, you know, is rightfully there and can be given.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, I think that the first thing is, think about what, if you're a leader, think about what it is that you need to feel in order to trust people, and then really question yourself on that. If you need to see them sending emails at 10 p.m., then I would argue that you're never going to trust them. So perhaps the first thing is think about why your team are there and what they're trying to deliver, and then build your trust around goals and deliverables rather than necessarily kind of time spent or hours worked, for example. model it, act as you would like to see others acting. So it's very difficult if a leader says to a team, I don't want you to work too late or beyond hours, and then they're sending emails to everybody at 11 p.m. It's a classic mistake because, of course, everybody looks at the leader, and as I said, the fish rots from his head, and they go, oh, well, there's an expectation or a behavior that says that we should all be sending emails at 11 p.m., for example.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, I think, as a leader, you want to think about all of the things that help your team to do great work or be the best that they can be. And so, for example, that might be about where they spend their time, how they're being influenced and inspired by the range of different inputs, not just are they staring at their computer screen for long enough.
Right.
And then, of course, there is a really important part to this, which is maintain standards. You know, don't let the standards drop. You do have to maintain that that's the case. But give people the freedom and trust them to use the freedom to deliver really great work and celebrate it. Celebrating their great work is a brilliant way of saying, I believe in what you're doing and I trust that you're going to do it again. So there's both a kind of maintain it by calling it out, but then there's a celebrate it when it's been done well as well.
Absolutely. Totally agree with that. So
the last thing I would add probably on that is give your teams ownership over the solutions to solving issues. Ask them what they would do. Put them in your shoes a little bit. Help them to see the challenges and let them make the call on what needs to be done in order to solve something. Start from a place of believing that all of your team are there to do their best work and to contribute fully rather than the other end of the scale.
Absolutely. I think that's a conversation I myself have had to have with, you know, leaders that I've worked with around, you've hired this team. You selected these individuals because you believed they were bright and capable. Now you need to let them be bright and capable. give them
exactly
the opportunity
right.
to do it.
exactly right.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us today. It was great chatting with you.
Not at all.
And, you know, I would love to, for you, before we sign off, you know, if folks do want to get in contact with you, if they want to learn more about BNA and the things that you all offer, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best, two great things you can do. First one is you can always email me at ben@bandaequals.com. You can check us out at www.bnaequals.com, and on our website, if you go to the blog tab, you can subscribe to our weekly bulletin. It gives you an update on everything that's going on at BNA on a weekly basis, a good dose of inspiration on a Wednesday.
Awesome. Thank you so much, sure. Ben. It has been great chatting with you. And to our listeners, I look forward to connecting and sharing with you more in the weeks to come. Thanks, all.
Brilliant. Thanks, Courtney.
Well, that was certainly interesting. He had a lot of interesting things to say. Interesting is my go-to word. I say interesting a lot. Isn't that interesting?
It is. Maybe you should get a thesaurus and look at the synonyms for interesting, and you can come up with new interesting words to say about
you
interesting.
You know what? I will do that as we talk about the podcast. What was your very first, what's your first impression?
You know, well, like I said, before we got to have the conversation with Ben, I was really excited because I do love having the conversation around culture, and even more than conversation around culture, I love talking about change, a space that outside of my TA brain that I love very much and spent time is change management. So it was really interesting to dig into those pieces with him and think through sort of, or talk through really those pieces of like truly collective ownership. And I think, you know, I love that he kept coming back there, that it's a collective effort, and nobody gets to own it alone and drive it alone without, you know, if you want it to be successful, at least.
Yes, I concur. I think that it was also fascinating, absorbing, Ooh. Pleasing, appealing, attractive, engaging, and gripping the way he presented Ooh. His thoughts.
I like it. You just took all of the thesaurus right That's there. Right. Just all the synonyms right there.
There you go, right there. If isn't this, and this is an appeal to our listeners. Listeners, if you have a comment or thought about today's podcast, by all means, please do send us an email. We want to hear from you. You can reach us at TribePod, TribePod, at proactivetalent.com. Operators are standing by. Are they really standing by? Yes, they're really standing by. Okay, maybe they're sitting. Cody said they're sitting by. They're sitting by waiting for your email. So please email. Email now, email often, email today.
Thanks, guys.